and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark Marble.
I'm Corwin Froll.
And I'm Dan Kurtzky.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 568.
Hey, wait a minute. Chaz not here. Hey, who had Chaz's name in the Deadpool?
Or the colon pool.
The colon pool. Oh, no. He keeps saying it.
That would have fit in with this movie, considering all the gore. So, yes, this is our full spoiler discussion of Deadpool and Wolverine, which has been out not even a full week as we're recording this. So this is pretty timely as far as the recording. We're backlogged on releasing, so it's possible this might be released the same week as Comic-Con if I'm ambitious, because we kind of have discussed this, and maybe it'll be a double releaser. But either way, we're going to try to get this out in a timely fashion as Deadpool and Wolverine break the bank, as it's already made over $500 million in not even a full week. Oh, God. So I guess before we go into any plot details on this movie, even though, let's be honest, it is a little weak on story, but that's not why people were going to see it. Initial thoughts on, for you. Go ahead, people.
Corwin.
A little torn at first. I'm not sure if I like it better than the second movie. Like you said, a lot on story. There's some parts where I think they could have taken things in a different direction. The And Wolverine is really like a big thing, because half the movie literally is more about Wolverine than anything else. But I need to see it again, but I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Dan?
Like, I think it's a good movie. It's pretty good. I think it is a more interesting concept to think about than perhaps a movie to watch, if that makes sense. But
elaborate.
Like, they made a movie about the fact that the MCU is replacing the older non-MCU Marvel movies and will eventually supplant them in cultural memory. And that is a fascinating thing to make a film about, especially a Deadpool film. And it allowed for like maximum, they put maximum effort into the nostalgia factor, but in a way that something like Endgame couldn't at that point. And I don't know, it's just like this like remarkably weird yet very creative thing that I love thinking about, but as a movie I'm like, yeah, it's like a 3 out of 5. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Corwin's point was interesting too about whether it was he liked it better than the second one. I don't know. I like the second one. Up until this came out, I liked the second one more than the first. I started watching the first again last night. I paused it because I was already falling asleep, and it's like, well, there's no point letting it play out, because the whole reason I started it was to actually watch it, not to fall asleep to it. But I liked the second one. The second one, I did like the second one.
Mark, I feel like every single time I've ever heard you tell a story about watching a movie, you fell asleep during the movie.
Well, there's a lot of reasons for this, mostly because I'm a night person, and I don't get a whole lot of sleep especially during the week. So the reality is, and I don't go to bed till late. That's the main reason, not because I can't sleep. I probably don't even try to go to sleep till like 3 something, and by the time it's like 8:30 at the latest, I got to start moving. So I don't. That's not, so like, even if I slept straight through with And with the cats, that's never going to happen. the reality is that's the reason why. Now, sometimes I fall asleep on things because it's just me. Sometimes it's the material, and sometimes it's a combination. Like I was just telling Chad, like I fell asleep on Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2 like 7 times in the last like week before I finally was able to piece it together and watch the literal end of it like two days ago. And I think I like it more than Part 1, but I don't know if it was worth the 8 attempts to get through it. But back to this, I think it is entertaining. I enjoyed it. It's almost assuredly is making the money that it's making because of, as Corbin pointed out, the end Wolverine part. Because to me, this is if once again we're at the point where this is the last Hugh Jackman appearance, maybe it is, maybe it's not. He certainly hasn't come out and re-retired again. I would suspect that would be a wise move to say that, at least until Secret Wars is done.
Yeah.
But I think everybody's going to be in Secret Wars. I think Secret Wars is going to be a larger, much more crowded version of what we saw happen in this movie.
Oh, it's going to, well, I thought you were going to say like Endgame or Infinity War, but it would almost have to be to begin with because we have more characters introduced in the universe than were introduced at any point up until now.
Go ahead. All right. I just mean in terms of like, hey, how do we one up the end of Endgame?
Mm. Well, oh, okay.
Well, we brought together all the people in the MCU for Endgame. So for Secret War, we'll bring together all the people in the MCU and all the people from the Fox movies and all the people from this and all the like every Marvel live action thing is going to show up and they're going to get every actor to reprise every role they possibly can. Like we will get in the same scene, Chris Evans as Captain America and Chris Evans as the Human Torch. All of it, everything. They're going for maximum IP overload.
Well, yeah, you could do that. I think at least I don't know if we'll get as much as some people think, but I think we'll get a lot of that. I would agree. I think if Hugh Jackman were to decide to go out on this note, I think because this is the best, and I'm in the minority here. I openly acknowledge this all the time. I'll die in the hill. I don't care. That I know everybody drooled over Logan. I thought Logan was a good movie, but it was inherently depressing. I might watch it again at some point, but I had no desire ever to see it after I watched it the first time. I don't care how good Hugh Jackman was in it, and he was. Nobody wanted to see Wolverine like that or go out like that or Professor X like that.
I would rewatch it just to see X-23 cut some people up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there were some cool things in the movie, but nobody wanted to see Charles Xavier go Joe Biden. Except instead of having the nuclear codes, he could kill people with his mind. I mean, no, that's not what people wanted.
Listen, I don't know about you guys, but leading up to this, so my brother, I went to see this with my brother, and he's like, hey, before this, we need to watch some movies leading up to it, which I thought meant Deadpool 1 and 2. But he's like, no, we're going to watch X-Men Origins Wolverine, and then Green Lantern, and then Deadpool, and then Logan, and then Deadpool 2. And let me tell you, I agree. I don't typically like dour and depressing movies. But when you watch that string of movies, you it's like the difference in quality is so staggering. It's like a concession stand full of like half-eaten candy and then a Thanksgiving dinner in the middle of it. It's such a good movie on every level that like I'm kind of okay with how sad and depressing it is.
You left out the Wolverine though. You didn't mention the Wolverine. See, the Wolverine is my favorite of the three Wolverine movies.
Was that the one where he went to Japan?
Yes, that's the one I liked. I mean, X-Men Origins sucked, but there were some cool parts in it. Logan was a depressing movie, but it was well acted. I thought Wolverine, the Wolverine was the closest to having a good story. It wasn't great. Yes. And Mangold did both. So it's not like you're flipping the bird to Mangold. Though he did still drop the ball by not having Logan in his costume in either movie. Though there were easy ways plot wise in either or both movies to at least give us a snippet what people have been dying for like 20 years and Fox. Unless we find out that he really wanted to do that in one of those two movies and Fox absolutely wouldn't let him. I still blame Mangold a little bit because it's like, how could you not take that opportunity? That being all said, this is the best Wolverine, the most comic accurate Wolverine we ever got. The way he looks, the way he moves, even being depressed and having the baggage that he has to deal with, self-inflicted baggage, but for the most part, at least as far as he's concerned. But the reality is, the way he moves, the way he fought, he wasn't. I mean, so sick of Wolverine getting his ass kicked by everybody he ever fought in the Fox movies. It's like, oh my God, he got so old. I mean, and every single time they were doing a new one, they told you, hey, this is going to be the Wolverine you've been waiting for. It's like, no, it's not. This was the Wolverine we were waiting for. Like at the end of the movie, when there's the whole Deadpool core when they're going from side to side, and when the screen is, the action is scrolling from left to right, and then all of a sudden it cuts back because the Deadpool core is pushing back, and then they all get pushed back because Wolverine just pushing them back. That's cool. And he's just that's that. So I think that's the best thing this movie has going for it. Hugh Jackman was fantastic in it. And I think that is what really drove this. I give Ryan Reynolds full credit for using, for number one, he is great at marketing. And he's really good at maximizing, now that he has some power, knowing how to use it to get who he got in this movie, especially the Wesley Snipes thing, because that was the only one that was difficult, because I don't care what Wesley Snipes says now, but I think we all know they didn't like each other, because that story has been out there for like 20 years.
Oh, really?
Yes.
20 years is a long time.
It's a long time. And it's not necessarily that, oh, Ryan Reynolds absolutely was, Ryan Reynolds was a dick, though you could see how he could be annoying, especially 20 years ago doing the same kind of stuff when nobody knew who he was. And Wesley Snipes, supposedly he was a real malcontent when they made Blade Trinity, that he was not a happy camper on set, and it took a lot to get him to even get out of his trailer. And so it may not have been a real personal feud between the two of them. He just may have not really wanted to do that movie and had issues with the director. And Ryan Reynolds just happened to be there. He didn't seemingly like Jessica Biel all that much either.
Was Blade Trinity the movie where like they had a scene where Wesley Snipes had to like lie down with his eyes closed, but he refused to close his eyes just to fuck with them? So they had to like CG closed eyes onto him.
I don't remember the scene, but if that whole story is true, you can almost take it to the bank. That would have been the movie, because that was not an easy shoot by all accounts. So that was the move. Of all the cameos that he pulled off, that was the one that, I mean, yes, if he had done any kind of deep research, that's the story that Blade was in this movie and wasn't just in there for a 2-second cameo, had been out there for a while, but that was the one of all the people he got to come in. That was obviously the hardest thing to pull off, especially with the theoretical laugh here that they are do. Eventually, we probably will see a new Blade movie, probably not until Phase 7.
I will say I didn't even know Blade was in here, but I tried to do as much media blackout as possible. So Gambit caught me by surprise. So did Blade.
Yeah, Elektra wasn't a surprise really, because they kind of announced Jennifer Garner was in this movie as Elektra, so that was a given.
X-23.
Yeah, X-20. Those are the ones that were confirmed. We didn't know, but again, the idea that Chris Evans was going to be the Human Torch had kind of been out there, but not as heavily rumored as the Blade thing, because I do remember specifically reading something somebody had said, that not only is Blade's in the movie, and not only is he in the movie, oh no, it's not like a 5-second cameo, he's in for a decent chunk of the movie. Sure, none of them get a lot of screen time, but as far as the chunk of time those characters, from the time they enter until they exit, they made the point of saying it's a significant part of the movie. And it's like,
I'm like Corwin, I had no knowledge of any of the, actually the only guest star that I knew about was X-23, just because there's pictures of her and Hugh Jackman on the red carpet for the premiere of this movie, like reenacting a photo they took however many years ago they made Logan together. So like, I knew that, but I had no idea about anybody else. Like, and even when Chris Evans showed up, I wasn't even thinking about who it would make more sense for him to be. I was just like, oh, cool, Chris Evans is back, and he's got his blue suit on underneath those rags. So when he yelled flame on, I had like the same reaction that Deadpool did.
I said it would have been funny if he broke out a skateboard instead.
Yeah, they did a really good job with the setup in the movie. The soundtrack was good too. I enjoyed the soundtrack.
The soundtrack. Listen, I like a good irreverent sound music drop, but it felt like this movie had like 36 of them, and they played the entire song every time. If there was one area where I wish they had some more restraint, I wish they had cut like half of the licensed music.
I think they were trying. I guess they were trying to do their Guardians in this. To a certain extent, along with, because this movie is similar to Guardians on one level, and I think it's also like trying to be Multiverse of Madness on some level too. It's weird. It's not. So let's just get this out of the way. Let's talk about the basic plot for what it is. And there's some weird things in this movie too. Like, we never get an explanation for how he's even in the 616 interviewing with Happy. How did he pull that off? All he had was a time machine. He didn't have a universe.
Wasn't that meant to be his universe? No,
it was our universe.
He got the Avengers props.
Yeah. Because remember, there's no evidence that there are any Avengers in Deadpool's universe. So I think I'm pretty sure they make it clear it was the 616 at some point. I thought they did. But either way, the whole basic plot of this is Deadpool is as morally bankrupt as he basically is. And even in this movie, he still kind of is, that he's looking for some, he's like Anakin, like looking for some deeper meaning, though, of course, for the wrong reason, because he's trying for in the beginning, he's just trying to impress his girlfriend, his wife. It was his wife, right? They were married.
Yes.
They were married. And we find out via the introduction of the TVA in this. We already had the idea of the Nexus points introduced in timelines, which were the moments that can't be changed, that you, no matter what you do, you can't change them. So now they give you a nice new concept, which is the anchor being concept, which is that certain universes, or you can make a case every universe, I forget how they said it, has an anchor being, which means if anything were to happen to that anchor being, it basically will cause the timeline to unravel. Not immediately. It'll take thousands of years, but basically from that moment when they die, time starts to basically rewind, I guess, backwards from the moment when they die, or in both directions, if you believe. Yeah, if time doesn't flow, you know, in one direction.
I like the concept of the anchor being just within the confines of this movie, because this movie treats timelines as like real world cinematic properties. So it's like, oh, your anchor being dying is the same thing as your most popular main character being taken away. So the franchise would wither and die and nobody would make movies about it anymore. Thus the universe is destroyed.
Right. And it turns out that the universe that's being wiped out is Deadpool's universe, and the anchor being that died was Logan, as in Logan from the movie Logan, and how he died, that started a chain reaction, which was going to wipe out his timeline, and the character of Paradox at the TVA, who's going rogue and hasn't bought into the new way the TVA is supposed to operate, says, well, he still believes kind of in pruning things that really shouldn't exist anymore anyway, and since that timeline is destined to be wiped out, he wants to do it pretty much as soon as possible, like in 72 hours, as opposed to letting it just happen naturally. The interesting thing about the anchor being is it makes you wonder, because there's really only two ways this can go. Either that timeline was always destined to be wiped out, and basically they're kind of like played God and make sure it didn't, or that Logan was never really meant to die the way he did, and him dying thus set the chain, thus doomed the universe. But it really can only be one of two ways, I think.
I think it might be kind of a reflection on, like, the, how do I say this without sounding too mean, a failing of the Fox movies is that they never had anyone else on par with Hugh Jackman's Wolverine in terms of popular characters. Like, there's definitely like everybody loves Patrick Stewart as Xavier, mm-hmm. and Jackman's Wolverine was like the pillar that held up that entire franchise, to the point that, like, when they did give us X-Men movies without him in it, it was always kind of like, that's great, but where's Wolverine? And, like, compare that to something like the MCU, which, you know, mileage may vary with newer characters, but they've kind of done a better job of slowly raising up their second tier of characters as the first tier was on the way out. So there is no, like, you would think that, oh, Iron Man died, so the MCU was going to be blown up by time or whatever. But by that point, there were enough beloved characters in that universe that the death of one of their most beloved wouldn't affect it.
No, I mean, I can see that. I mean, as in where the concept kind of came from, I can understand it. But again, just in the context of this movie, it's interesting, because if you buy the anchor being concept, that, again, it's like if Logan died and he was supposed to die, then that meant this timeline was always supposed to be wiped out.
Or, you know, if one of the X-Men movies were actually good enough to carry on the franchise, it wouldn't have to end with Logan. But I guess there's different ways to look at it.
Well, yeah, but again, that's like almost how Dan's approaching it, almost like a meta way of looking at it. I'm just looking at it at an MCU, TVA, multiversal way of looking at it. That if you establish that an anchor being is key to keeping a universe alive, that either if a universe loses its anchor being, it either has to be because it's natural, and if that's still going to cause time to unravel, then that means that timeline would have been destined to, that universe was destined to die anyway at some point. And if it's not, that means something altered the timeline, so Logan was never really supposed to die. Wolverine was not supposed to die in Logan, really, but chain of events kind of made it so he did, and that's the reason, you know, he sacrificed himself when he wasn't really supposed to, and that's the reason why that. But it was one of the things I thought about today, about just the anchor being concept. So Deadpool's given a chance. Well, your universe is dying. You can come work for me and can work for the TVA and become part of the sacred timeline, or a protector of the sacred timeline, because Deadpool interviews with Happy trying to get on the Avengers, but he gets rejected. So this is playing to Deadpool's desire to fit in and do something big picture, be a hero to
Vanessa.
Yes, to Vanessa. I was just about to say Vanessa, but I'm thinking, am I getting confused with the Kingpin, or is it another Vanessa? So Paradox was appealing to that desire. So it's like, hey, you only have two choices. You die with your university or work for me. He steals his little TVA pad. And so he starts jumping throughout the multiverse, trying to find another Wolverine that he can take with him, which is a shaky concept anyway. Because number one, it's safe to assume that all Wolverines are not anchor beings in their respective universe, but you could possibly be taking one that is. So you could be dooming another to save yours, which again would be perfectly Deadpool. Even if he knew it, he wouldn't care. But that leads to the multitude, you know, the multiple cameos of different Wolverines, which is one of the highlights of the movie.
Most definitely.
What was your favorite? Or either your favorite or the one that surprised you the most, because they might.
The motorcycle Henry Cavill surprised me the most. did not expect that at all.
Was he supposed to play Wolverine at some point? Like, what was up with that?
I think I guess he's one of the people that people have wanted or rumored to maybe be Wolverine. I doubt it. He's probably going to be too old.
A nice big middle finger to DC. That's all.
That was another reason. Yes. So let's see, just to list them off, we had height accurate Wolverine, which was cool. short King Wolverine.
I thought that would have been like Danny DeVito or what's his name, Harry Potter.
Yeah, that's true, but I think it worked better with it actually being
just mid,
yeah, just shrinking him down and yeah, using. So we had Age of Apocalypse Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
We had Old Man Logan on the Porch Wolverine. We had Crucified Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
We had brown and tan suit Wolverine recreating the McFarlane cover, even though he fought, it was Grey Hulk, wasn't it, when he fought him in that issue?
Yep.
But technically speaking, nonetheless, they recreate the McFarlane cover of the Incredible Hulk by having the Ruffalo Hulk's reflection in his claws. And then I did like Deadpool trying to say, hey, I'm Marvel Jesus. And he started reciting Loki's line to him, you dull creature. And he suffers a similar fate. But of course, you don't, unfortunately, get any of the fight between, which is another reason why I don't think he's done, because I think if they really thought he wouldn't play Wolverine again, I think they at least would have given us at least 10 seconds of that fight. If that was the only time we'd ever see Hugh Jackman Wolverine be able to, you know, squaring off with the Hulk, I think. But either way,
Patch.
Yes, Patch. Patch. That Patch was kind of funny too. Did I miss one before we got to the main one?
That's all I could think of.
Yeah, because you said the Henry Cavill one.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then he ends up at quote unquote the worst Wolverine of all, which is the one that wasn't around when the X-Men needed him, literally because he was out getting drunk. They didn't give much of an explanation for how people basically could just storm the castle and kill all the X-Men. That was kind of another big. Huh.
I think that was a missed opportunity with that one too. I think they should have pulled it from the old man Logan. I think they should have made it to where the villains tricked Wolverine into killing all the X-Men.
Yeah, it was Mysterio, right?
Yeah, it was a whole bunch of Mysterio and some other ones. All mine kind of tricked Wolverine into killing all the X-Men. That would have been, I would say too dark, but I mean, damn it, it's a rated R movie already.
Yeah.
I think that would have been definitely more, had a bigger impact.
But it might have made him irredeemable.
Yeah, that's true too. Well, he was tricked, so it wasn't on purpose.
But you could make a case psychologically that would have such an effect on him that even if he wasn't impotent and couldn't act anymore, he's never going to be 100% sure deep down what he's doing anymore. So I think it's easy from a redemption perspective, him not being around when they needed him and then doubting himself and him never embracing the concept of being an X-Man fully like they wanted him to. And then he regretted it. It's like, I just wish basically I could have been what they could have done this when they were here and all this stuff. That's a much easier hill to climb than if you had him responsible for you, directly responsible.
So if he was walking away from the character now, it probably would have been a better move. He would have been redeemed and would have been done.
So is our main Wolverine in this movie any specific reference, or is it just like we made up a Wolverine for this movie?
I believe it's made up.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. They like Corwin said, they probably picked different pieces of different stories, but I think for the most part, it's that's the Wolverine they decided upon to try to. That's the Wolverine Deadpool ends up getting. He brings him back to the TVA going, hey, this is, I got a new Wolverine, so we can bring him back as my anchor being. It's like nice going, a-hole. You picked the worst Wolverine of all, and they both get sent to the void. You know, as we saw in Loki, which is referenced maybe ad nauseum in this movie at times. But that's where we get to see some of the another missed opportunity is we get to see some of the. We see Pyro and stuff, but then they have these recast knockoff versions other than Sabretooth of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And it's like, why bother then? Why give us a new Juggernaut that looks just like the Juggernaut from Last Stand? Why give us Lady Deathstrike who's not Kelly Hugh?
Wasn't the same Juggernaut?
No.
Oh, I mean, I haven't seen him
it's not Vinnie Jones. They even reference it in the movie. They reference the fact they make it clear that it's not the same guy.
Oh, okay.
It's not the same character. Not the same character. They didn't refer to the actor. They just said it's not. They made it clear that it was a different Juggernaut. But that's where we get the introduction of. Even I must say the one thing that you have to give Deadpool credit for as a character is that as morally bankrupt as he is, even he has to have respect for Captain America. Even he has hero worship when it comes to Captain America. So when you get the Chris Evans reveal, you know, wearing his little shawl and his cloak and everything, and he's like, he's gonna say it. I think he's gonna say Avengers Assemble, and it turns out, of course, he's gonna say Flame On because it's Johnny Storm, and another character that Deadpool helps get killed. He threw him under the bus no matter what.
He did.
he didn't lie, but he did throw him under the bus, that's the part that makes me laugh throughout the movie. Wolverine's morality in this movie is seriously questionable, but even he can smell the bullshit. And Deadpool's like, you got this freaking guy killed. You got this effing guy killed. So that starts them on their journey to, they find the Resistance who's holding out against Xavier's sister. What's her face? Cassandra Nova.
Cassandra Nova.
Yes.
So we get to see, Nice Pool. Oh, God. And which is whose only redeeming factor besides his guns is introducing a Dog Pool.
Dog Pool. Yeah.
Dog Pool, the highlight of the movie for many people. And then.
Ugliest dog in the world.
Yeah. An ugly cute. But yes, if you had to vote one way or the other, let's be honest. But it's easier with an animal. It's like you kind of like, oh, it's like you can't. It's like they can't help it. It's like, come on. You have two big Deadpool Wolverine fights in this movie. The cooler one is the one in the car, obviously.
Oh, most definitely. When I watch that, when I have that on DVD, I'm going back to that scene specifically first, probably.
The fight that lasts literally forever until they both fall, until they both pass out, essentially. Not even from blood loss. They're just probably completely exhausted, and that's when they get brought to the Resistance headquarters, where we get introduced to Elektra, Blade, the Channing Tatum version of Gambit, X-23.
That Gambit had me rolling, because it was definitely difficult to understand what the hell he was saying half the time, and Deadpool making that accent coach joke was just on point.
Yeah, which is another inside joke, because of the fact that I think one of the reasons why I think Channing Tatum was so disappointed that he never got to play Gambit is because he really did spend a lot of time working on the accent. So I think that was kind of an inside joke there too. So he's like, he really did put in a lot of effort trying to get the Cajun accent to be pretty authentic, which doesn't mean that this is that version of the, you know, this is exactly how he would have talked, but I think this gives him a chance to do a little bit of it and still make fun of it at the same time. And
I'm still not over the fact that he showed up wearing a 100% comic accurate costume, including the stupid head sock thing.
Yes. Yep. With the staff and the cards and everything. So Deadpool, Deadpool tricked Wolverine into helping him by making him think that, hey, you know, the TVA, they can help basically go back and fix your timeline. So the X-Men wouldn't have to die because you weren't there to protect them. It's like, okay. And then Deadpool slips to say they might be able to help him, if they're able to help him. And that makes Wolverine realize that they're lying, which leads to their second big fight. They do some kind of half-ass thing. They use the Juggernaut's helmet to try to contain Cassandra Nova's power, because she's ridiculously overpowered in this movie. So the only way...
I love the physical representation of her powers when she's literally massaging people's minds and her fingers are through their head and in their brains. That was just, it took it from the comic, but that was fantastic.
It looks super creepy.
Yes, it was. So they're able to, Wolverine's able to convince her, because he's basically fighting for Charles's dream and representing everything Charles stood for. And the fact that no matter how rotten basically she is, Charles would still have wanted to save her and would have fought to save her. Conveniently enough, has a sling ring from probably another Doctor Strange or Wong variant that would happen to fall into the void. She sling rings an opening right as what Elioth or whatever is about to come and eat everybody. So Wolverine and Deadpool end up in Deadpool's universe. Now Cassandra Nova, who has been dealing with Paradox, finds out she's being seemingly betrayed by Paradox. So she ends up at the TVA, right? Because I went to the bathroom at this part, so I have to ask to make sure I'm right.
She goes to the TVA base in the subway station in Deadpool's neighborhood or something.
Yes.
So, and the Time Ripper, which I guess is a device that Paradox was going to use to wipe out Deadpool's universe in 72 hours or less, right? That's the device they were going to use.
Yep.
To accomplish this, that she's going to use this. She tries to take it over, which is going to wipe out his timeline and potentially give her the power to wipe out other timelines too.
Yeah, she wants to. She likes living in limbo because she can just do whatever she wants there and nobody cares. So she wants to wipe out every timeline so she can just go back and be the queen of limbo, and thus queen of everything that exists, because she wiped out everything. So
So Deadpool and Wolverine, whose goal is obviously is to stop her, but first they have to go through the entire Deadpool Corps, which leads to the. At least a nice pool getting killed, which is so typical Deadpool. To be fair, there's no way he would logically could assume that this would be the one Deadpool that wouldn't regenerate. But he didn't. Let's be blunt. We don't think he would have cared even if he did know. Because why would he need a human shield anyway?
Sorry. Okay. Speaking of the Deadpool Corps real quick, I'm glad Corwin is here, who majored in Deadpool in college. I know Lady Deadpool and Dogpool and Kidpool and Headpool are all from the comics. Are all of the specific individualized Deadpools in this scene comic references?
I'm going to say a majority of them, yes. Welshpool included. And Deadpool 2099, which is actually his daughter, but she was in there too. She's the one with the green kind of lines on her suit.
She's the one that looked like a Kamen Rider Deadpool or something.
Yes, very similar. Yeah, that's his daughter from 2099.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yes, poor Nice Pool gets killed, basically just so Dogpool can be eventually be adopted by Deadpool, and so we can steal the guns that he's been eyeing ever since they saw it met in the void. But this all based, this scene not just exists so Wolverine and Deadpool can fight side by side against 1,000 people that, of course, they can't kill anyway, which is part of the absurdity of the scene. But so we can finally get Wolverine in a mask, as which was conveniently well yes. shot. This was a well-conceived shot from the, and I mean throughout the entire movie, that you never do really see the back of Wolverine's costume. So you never, it looks like there could be a cowl connected to his suit, but you never really see it, the back of his suit in his neck area to know it. But yes, he reaches back and he just lifts it over his head. So we finally get to see Wolverine in a Logan in a mask. And I think it looked, for the most part, it worked. I mean, you could kind of see why. Maybe back in the day, people were a little concerned about how it would look. But I think it worked well enough. It certainly, to me, it accomplished the desired effect that for a moment that you didn't even realize, or that you don't really even know that it's Hugh Jackman until he talks. So they take on the Deadpool Corps. They wipe it. They wipe them out temporarily, and of course, till they regenerate. Then you get Peter Poole, who basically is he's kind of, it's almost like a pseudo anchor being in every universe. So like he's kind of like the sidekick in every universe. Everybody loves a Peter Poole, so he's able to basically call the Deadpool Corps off, so Wolverine and Logan can go try to attempt to stop Cassandra Nova.
Peter Poole is ridiculous because like his shirt couldn't button all the way, his balls were showing like bigger than anybody else. I don't know if you guys caught all that, but it was he was looking very sloppish.
That's how he impressed what's her face from Loki at the end.
Was Peter, I can't remember, was he the one normal guy that joined X-Force in the second
yes,
movie?
Yes.
Okay,
yep,
cool.
Yep. Yeah, he was the one who died, like all the other members of X-Force died, but then he fixed it with the time going back in time. Temporarily, they argue about who's going to one make the sacrifice because Paradox makes it clear, because you're mixing. The only way to do this is to take the two sides of the Time Ripper, which are contained, one side's matter, one side's antimatter. So, of course, when they mix, it ain't going to go well. So they make it clear that it doesn't matter about your healing factor, that once if you're holding both sides together, you're dead. So Wolverine says, you got to let me do this. You have something to go back to. I don't. And kind of like the little pep talk, like, hey, you gave me a reason to live and again and blah, 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 blah kind of thing. Except Deadpool is now willing to take one for the team. He tricks Wolverine, knocks him out of the room. He goes to try to do this on his own. He can't because he can't reach over to the other side of the machine in time. But Wolverine's been trying to break down the door during this entire scene as the countdown to the Time Ripper succeeding gets lower and lower. And Wolverine's able to, basically he grabs onto Deadpool and then he extends his claws into the other side of the machine. So now they are the conduits to drain them. Basically one's draining the matter, one's draining the antimatter, and eventually they're able to succeed. We assume Paradox is going to be thrown in some kind of time jail, but he's not dead, so that doesn't mean so. He'll probably succeed again at some point. Cassandra Nova dies. Wolverine stays in Deadpool's universe. And Deadpool he appeals to the TVA about all the resistance fighters who helped them, but that, you know, because without them they couldn't have made it back to their timeline and saved potentially multiple timelines and stopped Cassandra Nova. Could you do anything for these people? And we don't know if they do anything for all of them. We do know that X-23 is then brought into the adult X-23 is brought into the Deadpool universe, and that's pretty much the main plot. What there is of the movie.
I think I had a little hesitation when they brought in the whole Deadpool Corps for them to fight. I felt my very first reaction was like, I think this might be too much. I think they could have done something better. But looking back on it, it probably fit. I think it fit the story. But I don't know. I don't know what would have been better than the Corps.
In some ways, this felt like an instance where we didn't think we would get a third movie, and we don't know if we're going to get a fourth movie. So let's put every idea in this movie kind of thing. So it's like, yeah, Deadpool Corps, jam them in there.
I don't think the third act works all that well. Mm-hmm. I think, probably the second act is the act that works the best. The first act is kind of slow, which is why, besides the fact that they've always given you an action sequence to begin the movie, why they give you the action sequence, because they kind of begin in media res with Deadpool digging up Logan from the movie Logan's grave, because it's like, oh, because of his regeneration factor, there's no way he can really be dead, which of course he is. And that's how he starts fighting the TVA, but you don't see the end of the fight till later on, because of the fact that they're just making the point of, this is not where the story really began. I think the second act, when they were in the void, that's the best part of the movie.
Okay. Yeah,
in the end, yeah. But it's kind of interesting, because in a way, it avoids some of the traps of especially phases four onward. Like, it's a movie that deals with the multiverse, so automatically that puts you in the upper half of the Marvel content Far From Home, because so much of the quote unquote multiverse saga had absolutely nothing to do with the multiverse. So this movie does, but I think it also, unfortunately, it's also inconsequential in the big picture, which is another big problem with phases 4 through 6 so far, is that at the end of the day, there is, much like Multiverse of Madness, you're expecting, and they're hinting at some big changes or something that's going to have a big impact on the future of the MCU. And there's really nothing in this movie that does end up happening that does that.
And no, because they never paid off that Thor tease.
Yes,
which is really just a I mean, I think if you look at it, I believe it's just a repurposed scene, the scene from Dark World. Instead of cradling Loki, he's cradling Deadpool, I think. I believe that's what they did with that. I don't think he shot that.
Here's something on a tangent real quick. The intro, I think the intro is funny just because I don't know if you remember the last movie, Celine Dion did the theme song. And at the end of it, yeah, Celine did the theme song for the second movie, which is fantastic. But at the end of it, there's a little funny thing where he's like, okay, yeah, Celine, you're like 11, but this is Deadpool. You need to dial it down to like a 5. He's like, you need to bring it down. And she's like, I do not, you know, do less. He's like, damn, I should have got it in sync. It's what he actually said in that one. So for it to be in this movie was hilarious. But looking at the three different intros, I think I still like the other ones better. I may have to rewatch this one. I mean, it's funny to see him dancing. Yes, the NSYNC moves and using Logan's bones to kill people. But I don't know. Those other two intros, I think, are a bit more epic.
Well, I think like this intro would have been a little better if it was shorter. Like, again, they didn't need to use the entire song. Especially like I thought it was really funny when like it just kept cutting back to just Deadpool close up. Dancing in the, like, he stopped fighting and now he's just dancing to the song, and that was funny the first two times, but then they did it like 7 other times because it's the whole goddamn song. Just cut it off, come on.
Yeah, that is a valid point. I don't mind it from the opening sequence perspective. I probably think the opening sequence for the second movie probably is the better one from what I remember. Oh, yeah. Just from having watched last night, watching the beginning of the first one again. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting seeing just how he plays Deadpool a little differently and I know it's more of the origin story, but in the beginning of the original Deadpool, he's already Deadpool. So, mm-hmm. But I just kind of see little nuances in like how he talks and everything. How it's changed a little bit. Maybe it's more confidence, or we know, and let's be blunt, we know Ryan Reynolds is essentially playing Ryan Reynolds. He's just dropping more F-bombs than he probably does all the time, but the reality is, I think it works. I think I liked it. I know some, of course, we get the typical people overreacting, the hyperbole, like, oh, how many times have we heard it's the best movie since Endgame, which the reality is, we all know the quality of the MCU post and its post, let's say, Far From Home, since that really ended Phase 3.
There we go. Yeah, I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah, people always forget that. The epilogue, the actual conclusion of Phase 3 was far From Home, which works very well as an epilogue. That this is in the top, you know, this is in the top half of the Marvel projects that have come out. I was thinking about this today. I can't say it's certainly not the best one at all. I mean, the things that come to mind immediately, Guardians 3. No Way Home, and I almost forgot, because they seemingly have forgotten about it, though, all kidding aside, I think they'll probably announce that the sequel to this at D23, Shang-Chi. But it's been so long since we haven't even seen the character. You know, in like 3 years. But it falls into the second tier to me. It's probably in the Wakanda Forever, Multiverse of Madness tier. It's good, like I said, it is inconsequential, like most of phases 4 and 5 have been. There's very few of these movies that have been consequential. And a lot of these movies, the actual movie is inconsequential, but the credit scene. I mean, even Shang-Chi is inconsequential. It's just a post-credit scene about who and why the rings are communicating with in space. Why are they sending a signal? Who are they sending it to? We haven't had any payoff for that. We probably won't until 2026 at the earliest, but it could pay off. And that's the only thing of the movie that's really consequential, big picture wise. But that, mm-hmm. but that's a lot of the MCU. And, you know, it's like you got something like Loki, which is very consequential. And then you have so much stuff that like Black Widow and you have Thor that's completely inconsequential. Yep. So this kind of falls in that mode too, but it's entertaining. It certainly it doesn't mean the Marvel's back because it's just like Guardians, it's its own animal. This thing was going to be big, regardless of whether people hated the Marvels, whether they liked the Marvels, whether people think that Captain America: Brave New World is going to suck ass completely. Like it's like all these signs before the trailers came out would indicate that it would, but. Whether it does or it doesn't, this movie is going to have no impact, I think, at all, big picture, because Marvel is at the station-to-station stage. My favorite analogy, the baseball analogy, that Marvel movies are just like momentum in baseball right now. Momentum in baseball is only as good as your next day starting pitching. Marvel's momentum is only as good as the next project. This was good, and people hate Agatha Harkness. That's going to suck a little life out of it, even if they don't. This is going to have no impact on people running out to go see Captain America and or liking it. It was good. It was good for what it was. It's good that because of how big the Comic-Con news turned out to be, like the last 5 minutes, because nothing before that was big, that at least they didn't suck the momentum away from having this huge financial blockbuster movie like that. Hey, here's a really boring Comic-Con. Enjoy it. Luckily, they gave us something to chew on. So I think it does add some fuel to the fire, which is something they desperately needed. But they got a lot. 2025 is going to be critical for them because they have so many projects that can go either way that they kind of really need a good year. Even though I guess the one thing we all can say is we all can agree that Deadpool and Wolverine will be the best Marvel movie of 2024.
Yeah, I mean, the quality of this movie has nothing to do with the where the MCU is at, because I've seen people say it too, like, oh man, Deadpool and Wolverine's great, Marvel's back, baby. And it's like no, because like for Marvel to be back, the MCU would have to have gained back some quality. But like Deadpool's this movie's success is built on the fact that it's a sequel to a now long-running Fox franchise that people like the first two of, and everybody thought that they were never going to get to see Hugh Jackman play Wolverine again, and now here we've got this neat treat. So like it's those two things together plus the fact that hey, the movie actually ended up being pretty damn fun, and all of that exists like to the left of the MCU, you know.
Yeah. It's like how Guardian, just like Guardians 3 was insulated. It didn't matter that Quantumania just completely, you know, wetted the bed. It didn't matter because people were interested enough in Guardians and seeing how that story was going to play out. And yes, it helped that Guardians felt like a phase 1 through 3 movie anyway, which makes sense because it was written during phases 1 through 3. It was written during phase 3. But the point is, it was its own thing. So all this proves is what we've said for a long time. There is no superhero fatigue. There's bad movie fatigue. There's uninteresting concept fatigue. It's let's go throw anything against the wall and hope it sticks fatigue. You give people something they want to see, people will go see it. Secret Wars is a concept of like you just described what it could be. That's probably going to mean people will go see it, even if the rest of, and that does not necessarily mean the MCU. Oh, the MCU is back because, hey, look, Secret Wars made $1 billion. It's like, OK, what do you do afterwards? What's your plan going forward? Even though probably the X-Men, the mutant saga, I think, has always been heavily rumored to be phase 7 going on. That will be the mutant saga, especially now that we're going to have Adamantium once we get to Captain America: Brave New World.
Oh, they said that. Did they mention that?
Yes. Ooh. Celestials are made of adamantium. Ooh, so our okay. adamantium supply will be thanks to Tealmit sticking out of the ground.
You know his name? Oh, that's adorable.
Well, I know his name more because it's the same name of the Titan from Godzilla. Godzilla and Love of the Monsterverse. and they both ended up suffering a similar fate. except, I guess, I don't know, I probably would rather be kind of like frozen as a statue. That kind of would be a better way to go, I guess, as long as you're literally dead, not trapped inside. So Marvel needs a lot of positive. They need a lot of successes in a row in order to be back. And for people, that's why I think at least the Comic-Con stuff helped, because the idea of having a Doctor Doom driven Avengers 5 leading into Secret Wars at least means that the next two Avengers movies could potentially be as cool, even with the fact that we have no idea who the Avengers are, and they probably are not going to be nearly as interesting as the core team that we had. The point is, at least we have a cool villain driving the story for
story.
And that might help offset the fact that they're going to throw so many people we probably don't give a shit about onto the Avengers. But it could, it could kind of jumpstart things. Steering myself back, that I thought this was good. It was kind of was what I thought it was going to be. In a way, maybe I would say I was a little disappointed. Maybe because I, like many people, I thought this was going to have some change, some lasting impact on something in our universe. And since almost none of it takes place in our universe, it was destined not to. But you don't know that till you're watching the movie.
And I struggled for a little bit in my mind afterwards, thinking like, okay, did we get enough Deadpool universe supporting characters? I mean, the other characters are what really made the other movies really good as well. Yep. But this one, it's like
they're short.
We had to take that out. Yeah, we had to take that out to fit Wolverine. And if they would have done that again, it would have just been more of the same like the other movies. So I can see them taking a different route with this. And of course, the end Wolverine being a bigger part, they'd have to probably phase out Luhender and some of the other, actual Deadpool characters, which we get a little glimpse of with the birthday party and all. But I don't know. I that was on my mind for a little bit.
Yeah, it's been diminishing returns with his supporting cast through each of these movies, because like his relationship with Vanessa is the central axis that the first movie turns on. And then in the second movie, she's in it for a few minutes, and then you don't see her until the end credits. And then the third movie, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, they broke up off screen, and she's in the beginning for a minute and the end of the minute. And like, I mean, they definitely gave the audience what they wanted. Like, everybody bought a ticket for exactly the movie that we got. But at the same time, it's kind of depressing that this room full of 9 people that are supposed to mean the absolute world to the main character, the only reason I really know that they're that important to him is because he pulled out a photo of them and told me in this movie. Like, I would like to see, I'm not asking for them to come along on the adventure or anything, but like, I want to see these people matter more in his daily life,
I thought we'd have something in the third act, at least with Colossus showing up to help, or the X-Men, Yuki and Negasonic or something. Yeah, I thought they'd come in and contribute a little something. Muhinder come in and hit somebody with his taxi or something. But yeah, again, and Wolverine, so I can't really be upset at it.
They underline the Wolverine.
Yes. Yeah. they did do a trade-off, and that's but I agree. My thoughts were similar, Corwin. I thought that in a way, because especially the last movie, they really did amp up the whole X-Men ties. They amped up especially the Negasonic and Colossus aspect of trying to appeal to the non-corrupt sides of Deadpool's personality. That so it did, in a way, it did kind of seem it was unfortunate that they really were shortchanged. I mean, I guess it's cool that they all got they all got to be in the movie again, but I'm not gonna
Shatterstar of all people. It's like I just surprised, like,
Shatterstar was at this party, but Domino wasn't. Come on. Come on.
That is true. That is interesting about some of the people that were not. I mean, Peter was actually the only one who really got multiple, like, scenes, really, other than not being wrapped around the party and stuff. Blind Al too, I guess, technically. But I mean, as far as, yeah, I'm never going to complain about getting more of Brianna Hildebrand as Negasonic. So I love her. So, but see, they gave her that, and she really had absolutely nothing. It was so funny going back watching the first movie which was 8 years ago? Was it 8 years ago? Something like that now. That she was so much younger then. You could just see the difference. Oh, yeah.
I'm laughing at Deadpool and Blind Al's talk about the cocaine and how they like you won't let them.
Yeah.
Use cocaine and all the slang they use for it. It was just, you know, it was hilarious.
And you do give Marvel credit for at least not trying to tone this down. I mean, now that knowing Marvel, they will learn the wrong lesson from this. It's like, hey, we need like all these movies. We need every other movie rated R. It's like, but the reality is, I'm based on the right subject and the right, you know, the right cast, the cast of characters. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, A, you know, you can do it and people are not going to be up in arms about it. And you also know that people will go see it. I mean, because this movie, obviously it's not there yet, but it clearly, depending how it holds, it obviously has a really decent chance to, if it doesn't get to a billion, it certainly can get close. So the reality is that this movie is a huge, huge hit. So just by slamming an R on it, slapping an R on it doesn't mean that it's always guaranteed that it can do money as well, or just as much, make as much money as a typical like PG-13 MCU movie.
And here's where the challenge is really going to come in, because if they're going to go for Deadpool 4, how can they go better? Not even bigger, just how can they even do better? And that story is going to be a challenge. The jokes are going to, well, I guess when you have pop culture, you probably have no shortage of some jokes, but you know, where are they going to move the character to next is going to be a big thing. And I don't know, three movies, the trilogy is kind of the sweet spot for most franchises, but
money though.
Yeah, that Marvel cash. I think it also will depend where things, the big X factor in this, no pun intended, is we don't know I've been king of segues the last month or so, that are cute little references. The reality is we don't know what the MCU is going to be like when Secret Wars ends. Sure. So we don't know what they're going to do, how they're going to resolve the multiverse saga. Is it going to be a multiverse? Is it going to be one universe? Is it going to be the multiverse is going to exist, but now there's basically all, it's virtually impossible to be able to travel between one and the other.
I think they're going to have to bring back Cable and some new mission is what I think. And we'll get the buddy of Deadpool and Cable actually working together for a full movie compared to the 20 or 30 minutes we got in the second one. I think that's...
You know what they do? You know what Deadpool 4 is?
Mm-hmm.
They do a buddy cop thing, except it's not Cable and Deadpool. It's Deadpool and Gwenpool.
Oh, Lord.
And you lean all in on the fact that she is a regular person from our world who is a fan of the MCU, gets sucked into the movies, doesn't like Deadpool at all, and they have to, like, he's breaking the fourth wall, she's from the other side of the fourth wall, they don't get along at all, but for some reason, they have to go on this adventure together to get out of the whatever, and force them to deal with the Council of Kangs.
And that's how it disappears from the Marvel Universe.
Yes, they reconcile all of it, and the whole time she's like, but this can't be what this movie's about, and he's like, yeah, no, I know, we just gotta grit our teeth and go.
I think we probably have already seen our resolution to the Council of Kang thanks to Loki. and if we haven't, I think it's probably going to be where we'll see Dr. Doom take care of him, which might be the biggest biggest applause from the entire crowd in the movie. It's like, thank God, Kang is over with. Never should have been Kang. That was such a horrible decision. No matter how it came about, that was so horrible.
Kang is a great character if used properly, but you just made me laugh because somebody shared a meme of Robert Downey Jr. from Tropic Thunder, and like, at least they didn't keep Kang and decided to use him, Robert Downey Jr. instead.
God, I saw the same the same face photoshopped onto like Black Panther, and
I gotta say it was funny, but
I suppose. I mean, I think Kang in the comic books has there are times when he's been impressive and scary, but they failed miserably in the MCU to make him a threat, and they got
what do you mean Ant-Man beat him by himself?
Yeah, I know. No, the ants the ants helped beat him, really. Super intelligent ants helped. The point was, even in Loki, they never made him out to be that scary. I mean, they opened the door to make him interesting, but He Who Remains was such an such a different variant to begin with of what look of Kang that, and the Kang version, and we got an Ant-Man, could have been in a parallaxian way, could have been interesting, because you don't know if he was really being honest about that. You basically need me to deal with what's coming. But now the timeline's changed and the multiverse is altered because of Loki. So they really don't need, they don't need to deal with it as a collective. There are some Kangs obviously have not been wiped out or pruned, but if there's one Kang in particular that's left, Dr. Doom probably will take him out. But I think this is much, sometimes, you know, it's like another great, another sports analogy. Sometimes the best trades are the trades you don't make. Sometimes the best movies might be the movies you never make. And I think it's really smart that I'd like almost like divine intervention based on different things that played out that they now don't have to worry about proceeding along with a storyline that people were not really into anyway. Cause that could have really ruined the MCU more than it's already been kind of like going off the rails. It could have completely derailed everything, closed the train station, shut down the manufacturer and boom.
Damn.
But now at least, you know, the Dr. Doom would have been cool on his own, even before the RDJ announcement of him being Dr. Doom, that as a character, Dr. Doom is inherently cool. So the idea that we're going to have seemingly again a parallaxian Dr. Doom who thinks he's doing what's right to protect either our world and or our timeline, and what the lengths he will go to, kind of mirroring the Wanda quote about Tony, that the paraphrasing that Tony Stark doesn't know the difference between protecting the world and destroying it. That's probably exactly what Dr. Doom is going to be doing, whether it's applied to the world or our timeline. He can't see the difference between saving it and destroying it because he's got tunnel vision. But I'm ready for that ride. But this movie, this showed you that Marvel still can deliver, which I think deep down we knew because we saw Guardians deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw No Way Home deliver. So pretty much like once every like three or four projects, they're able to have something that reminds you that if you have the right team and the right concept and the right cast and everything else, it still works. It's just that they can't skate through anymore with stuff that either people don't want to see or that's not really well conceived or has no bearing on anything. And I think that's the thing too. That's why I think the whole inconsequential aspect is a problem. It's like, okay, we watched this movie. What does it have to do with anything? It's the multiverse saga. What the hell does Thor and Love and Thunder have to do with the multiverse? Absolutely nothing.
There's nothing wrong with making things that stand on their own and not connect to everything else, but they've got to put that. They can always gamble, take some risk, you know.
Right.
But they've got to put the quality in there as well. It just can't be a gamble of what the property is and not really a good script and not really a solid movie. You can't have all three of those being negatives.
Agreed. And they just have to, and they have to have some kind of understand. It's like, it's not all quote unquote fan service. And you don't give people exactly what they want, but you also can't swing the pendulum too far and give people something they make it clear they don't want, or there's no reason to think that they do want it. And in the meantime, while you're doing that, Here we are almost like 3 years later. They haven't announced the next Spider-Man movie yet. It's like they haven't announced Shang-Chi 2 yet. You know, two of their better movies right off the bat.
Yep.
And it's like, and here we are waiting. In the meantime, we've gotten the Marvels and I'm interested in the Thunderbolts. I don't know how many people percentage wise really are, But you got the Thunderbolts, you got Agatha Harkness, which an extremely small percentage of Marvel fans really care about. And you got Ironheart, which nobody cared about. And they greenlit that show before they even saw how anybody was going to react to her in Wakanda Forever. These are the things that when they're decision making that hopefully, yes, they've changed or modified it a tad. But it's still going to be years before they kind of like get all this stuff comes out in the wash. So you know that they moved on, or they kind of changed their thought process. But
with so a few things with Ironheart, I can see them trying for that demographic, trying to bring the black actors, the black story, the black characters, giving them some foreground. Now whether they built it up properly enough to make it popular, make it wanted enough is another story, but I give them props for at least trying. So I'll give them that for at least with Ironheart, but they can't do the same thing two or three other movies around it where it's, you know, a gamble again, a couple negatives under trying to make it a positive with, you know, three different negatives. I will give Marvel props for Werewolf by Night, because that was a fantastic thing that I don't think I knew I wanted, but when they gave it to me, I completely enjoyed it. Different enough, not connected to anything, but still just a solid story.
Yes, incredible. Still one of my absolute favorite MCU things.
Yes. Yes. So at least, and that shows you that they can do horror. They can do horror and it can work. So it's not like they shouldn't take any chances. It's just that I think they swung the pendulum too far into learning the wrong lesson, like from Guardians, like, hey, we can do anything because we're Marvel. It doesn't matter what kind of C-tier project, D-tier character we can take. I mean, the only problem with Ironheart is Ironheart's not particularly popular even in the comic books. You know, it's like, it's even arguably Ms. Marvel goes back. It kind of falls somewhat into that, even though Iman Vellani is one of the best things they introduced in phases four onward. No, people didn't watch her show all that much. So I like her. She's cool. She was the best part of that movie. And I like Monica too, but nobody, you know, but I don't want to go down the Marvel's road.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. But the reality is they have to focus more on giving people what they want a little bit more than they have. And I'm at least modifying it. You know, it's like maybe one out of every four projects, one out of every three, maybe try something a little different, but don't completely ignore the stuff that people want.
And I think that's what the first Guardians was. I think the first Guardians was like that one out of five was just, okay, let's just roll the dice. But going back to Ms. Marvel and Ironheart, I know Ms. Marvel is not necessarily, I would say, my demographic. I think that skews to the younger audience, but was it even really a hit with teens?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm just curious if, you know, what demographic that really resonated with, because I thought it was fun. I watched it all. I thought it was cool, but I didn't necessarily feel like it was for me.
I agree. And that's what Chad said too. But, and I think there's a certain truth in it, but I also think that they knew that they were building the interest in whatever interest it was going to be for that Marvel's movie, basically around Iman Vellani, because they knew Carol Danvers / Brie Larson was not going to be able to sell that movie. Now, they could, if they had approached it differently, maybe she could have, but they knew going in, that wasn't their plan. So they were really counting on, I think, Monica second, but more Kamala to sell it, except nobody watched the show. So that's one of the reasons that that was not a project anybody cared about. It wasn't a bad movie. Nobody cared about it, and that's why it bombed.
We'll see how Young Avengers does, because they've started laying all those pebbles. So
yeah, they better kick those pebbles way down the road, because Dan might be interested in it, but there no. And I'm not taking a shot. I know you would be much more interested in a lot of people. But I think that is the example of that would be the wrong lesson to learn. People do not want to see Kamala Khan, and I like Haley Steinfeld. I'd like to see her character. People do not want to see Cassie Lang. That's not what's going to bring the MCU back. That's not going to excite people.
I mean, I would hope that the lesson they learned from the MCU mostly floundering with the occasional huge success is that the path forward is to focus on a small number of projects that they can make as good as possible. You know, like as cool as those big timeline graphics of the different phases are, it doesn't mean anything if the company is making promises that the actual creators don't have the time or resources to deliver on.
But of course that won't happen because everything always has to get bigger and bigger and outdo the last thing no matter what. Part of me thinks we're just lucky that along the way we occasionally get a movie like this one and a movie like Logan, which I kind of can't stop thinking about because of how this movie opens. And it's funny because after revisiting Logan recently and seeing how it holds up, if I want to watch a comic book movie that has incredible acting and writing and directing and overall cinematography, I'm watching Logan again. But if I want something that's just crazy fun, I'd probably go back to this movie because Mark was right. You know, the second act, because it's the part where we get to play with all of the toys at once. And most of them are toys we haven't seen in decades, which makes it feel like somehow less cynical than a lot of the other crossovers we've seen over the last few years, once that became a big trend. So I think that both Deadpool and Logan can be a sign of things to come, but only if the businessmen at the top stop getting in the way by overpromising because it builds up hype.
No, I agree. I think there are lessons, good lessons that can be learned from this. The question is, will they choose to learn those lessons, or will they just say, hey, this is what it's really telling us. It's like that whole thing about Netflix about, hey, you know, 75% of everybody who's ever going to watch your content watches it within like the first 30 to 45 days. Hey, that means we need more content. When obviously I would spin it, no, it's telling you have too much. Because you keep drowning out your own stuff. It's like people forget it's even there. Like, I haven't watched Beverly Hills Cop 4 yet, but I know it's there. But eventually, if I don't watch it, I'll forget that it's there because there's so much other stuff. Oh, I'll watch this instead. I'll watch that instead. It's like things can be interpreted different ways. I just hope that. But I think you also mentioned that and we see this in the jokey memes about, oh, yeah, the MCU is dead. The MCU is back. It's like, analytically, this does not mean the MCU is back. It just means exactly like we've talked about. It's that the right project, but that appeals to the right audience, it's going to do well. You throw out crap, you throw out stuff that people aren't sure that they want, and it turns out that it's crap or it sounds like it's crap, then people, especially with Marvel now, hey, we don't need to go see it because in 3 months it'll be on Disney Plus anyway, and I'm paying for Disney Plus. That you have to give people a reason to go see something in the theater, and this was one of those. And this was one of those movies. So when you deliver like that, like Infinity War, like Endgame, No Way Home, things like that, people will go see it. If you give something, if you don't make it appealing, people will just wait and say, eh, especially because of, and this is where the lack of connective tissue comes into play. That was Marvel's strength, that you didn't want to be left out in anything. And so few of these projects, I should say, are actually connected in any kind of logical, meaningful way, that you really aren't missing all that much. I mean, you missed more by watching Loki probably than, especially going into this movie, you'd be more lost by not seeing Loki than if you hadn't seen any other Marvel movie in this entire phase. It probably isn't one movie you would need to understand anything about. Literally, Loki is the most important thing to you, being more lost than not lost going into, you know, when this movie's playing out. So that's part of the issue too. But
just to make the obvious comparison here, you know what my favorite thing about James Gunn's Superman movie is? It's the fact that all I really know about what James Gunn wants to do with Superman is that he's making this one Superman movie. Is Superman going to be in the DC movie universe going forward? Of course he is. Are there going to be multiple Superman movies? Sure. Will he appear in other movies? Most likely. But none of that shit's on the table right now because we're just focusing on this one movie that's being made. And all I have to care about is, hey, I hope this one movie's good. Like, I would love to be able to think about an MCU thing like that. And it's just like part of the benefit, despite that marathon that I was subjected to leading up to this. The cool thing about Deadpool 3 is that I kind of just had to think about Deadpool 3, and it brought in all this other stuff, but it still felt like I was experiencing one contained movie. And I don't know, I miss that. I miss the feeling of, hey, they made a movie, and if it does really good, they'll start making a sequel maybe, or maybe they'll start making two more at the same time so it can be a trilogy and we can pretend it was always supposed to be. Like, Bring back the good day.
I ain't mad at you. I ain't mad at you. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Mark, you just had said something about Disney Plus, and I just remembered that they dropped the Hulu Disney Plus Max bundle now. Started today, I think, or recently.
I did hear about that. It doesn't help me, unfortunately, since I pay for my Disney Plus yearly, so I'm locked in. I would have to see
I don't think they let you do that anymore. When I just got back on Disney Plus, I could only do monthly.
Unless I just hopped back on too, because I'm like, all right, enough of the things that I wanted to binge have come out now, so let me get a subscription for a month or two, and I didn't see an option for an annual.
Yeah, it's only monthly now.
So it could be whether phasing it out, or it could just be where it's grandfathered in if you still have it, and then you get to pay up front for max I pay monthly.
Yeah, I imagine they'll keep you grandfathered in for another like couple cycles, and then maybe they'll be like, actually, we're changing it starting next month, kind of thing.
Which is a pro and a con for them, because it's dangerous. I mean, they can get more money out of you by doing it monthly, but again, you also it makes it much easier to say, hey, there's nothing I want to watch this month, so I'm going to cancel and then come back. So the whole Stranger Things Netflix concept. So I think that's a, but still,
slippery slope.
Yeah, it is a slippery slope. So for people who have Disney Plus though, and that was a negative to the whole conversion process during the pandemic, is like they have so many people conditioned to either wait for something on streaming, or just now, even post COVID, the fact that people know that, hey, if it's a really successful Marvel movie, if it's a really successful Marvel movie, then probably it will only be like about 3 months or so. If it's a movie that really did crappy, it'll probably be a little bit longer, because they're going to try to keep it on pay-per-view as long as possible, like the Marvels and like Indiana Jones, to try to get as much blood from the stone as possible to offset what it didn't make in the box office. But you know, no matter what, within like 4 to 5 months max, you're going to be able to watch it at home if you want to watch it.
Well, it's funny because like I signed on to Disney Plus for the first time in forever 2 days ago, and at the top, the banner on the top is like where they usually like cycle through all the hot shows or whatever. It's a huge Deadpool and Wolverine banner, and at first I thought, no shit, it's on here already, but it was just an ad for the
yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, they have a. They have the trailer, and I think they have a little like 3 minute like behind the scenes, whatever it was, and it's like, yeah, I'm not gonna watch it. It's like, yep. But I noticed that too.
I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, what are they doing?
Surprise!
Is this their first like huge box office in how long, and they're putting it on Disney Plus right away? What? No, what?
But see, funny about that is at least they were smart. They were smart from the perspective that they dodged the bullet in a good way, that all the major cameos and stuff, and certainly the scenes of that had not really leaked out until very, very late in the game. But they knew once the movie opened, that was over with. So that's why they did what they did at Comic-Con, by having that free showing for the people that were in the hall, and then bringing in all the people that made all the heroes that were in the void come out and come on stage and everything, because they knew there was no point keeping it secret any longer anyway, because everybody by the end of that evening, people were probably going to find out. Even if they didn't want to, they were going to stumble into some of these articles or headlines talking about, hey, this cameo and that cameo. And so I think they kind of just embraced it on that level, and I do think that worked. We got anything else, people?
No, but I will be going back to theaters to see it again. I know Alien Romulus is coming up, so I might take a Saturday and make a double feature.
Yeah, I'm seeing it tomorrow as we're recording. I'm going to see it tomorrow. It's the one week of the next few that's not locked in, because what the hell am I seeing next week? Alien Romulus is 2 weeks. I'm trying to think what is coming out next week. I'm completely zoning out about it. But yeah, I figured this would be the time to see it again. And then that'll be it until it comes on Disney Plus.
The only other thing I'll throw out here is that I've seen lots of chatter on social media trying to figure out who the MCU's anchor being is. And I've decided to officially choose the winner right here on air. And the winner is Madison, Because her name has two N's, one Y, but it's not where you think.
Oh, God. Now, I do want to pay attention when they talk about anchor beings again to make sure, to see if it's clear in the movie whether they're implying that every universe has one or whether it's selective. I know they don't go into a lot of detail, but try to infer if they're trying to imply that every universe has one or that some universes do. Because obviously, we don't know, because considering the way it works, in theory, Tony Stark could have been. He could have been our anchor being, because again, at the time wouldn't unravel all at once anyway.
Yeah. But now we have Ironheart, Mark.
Oh, please. But I mean, it could be Cap. We just got to keep him frozen in a cryogenic tube to keep him alive. He can't die. Hit him with some Vita-Rays. Get him young again. We need him. He can't die. But yeah, the anchor being concept is one of the most interesting things in the movie. So that's why I do. When I go back and see that tomorrow, I want to pay attention to that little speech again, just to see if I can have more confidence in what thinking one way or the other, whether implying every universe has one or some universes do, and those and that's just like every single universe's nexus point isn't the same. That I wonder if every single universe necessarily has to have an anchor being, everyone's going to die. It might not even be the way he explained it. It may not necessarily be that they can't die, but that's something that causes a death to happen and not the way it was supposed to at the time it was supposed to, that there could be more. We could get more explanation. Maybe as we get closer to Secret Wars, we'll get an explanation for what that concept really is, that's one of the things I am most interested in, just because it does kind of raise the specter of what a lot of implications with that. Unless it's the way of saying, yeah, certain timelines are just not meant to last no matter what. If you have an anchor being what that means is you're living on borrowed time no matter what.
Or maybe it can change. The anchor being can be changed with enough, I don't know, popularity of a character or something. It can switch.
Isn't that how Deadpool and Logan survived at the end of this? They're like, you know, Deadpool and Wolverine together, you can't get rid of that.
Well, storyline-wise, supposedly what they did destroying the Mind Ripper the Time Ripper and wiping out Cassandra Nova was enough that basically it healed their timeline. His timeline, Deadpool's timeline. It basically prevented the decay, so it wasn't going to... So now not only... They were safe. So it's not it wasn't necessarily like, hey, we got a new anchor. Because I don't even know how, like we talked about, I don't even know conceptually how that would work. Just because he really is in your universe's anchor being, no matter, it's not like you're just sticking him in a slot. I mean, it's like, regardless of whether it affects the other universe that you're stealing this character from, it's not the same version of the same character. It's not literally the same person. So... See, I don't know. I think that was a shaky concept to begin with. So at least they were kind of smart enough to work around it in the end to make it seem to say that's not the reason why your universe, your timeline is now safe.
Yeah.
But
although I think, to be fair, I think the reason they actually survived was literally Deadpool and Wolverine are too important to the Marvel brand. So there is literally no way that they would write a movie that kills off both of them at the same time.
That part no one can really argue with. All right, guys, push what you want to push.
Listeners can find me at earthmightiespodcast.com, where there's links to all the shows, EMP, where we talk about the Avengers, EMX, where we talk about the X-Men, and Merc with a podcast where myself and my friend Scott talk all things Deadpool. Dan, take it away.
Mosaic Comics over on YouTube. Talk about Green Lantern a lot. I don't know why anybody listening to this would care about that. I don't know.
Ryan Reynolds does not diss Green Lantern in this movie. I guess that's something.
Yeah.
I know. I'm still not recovered from that.
Don't get too used to it, because he still talks shit about it any chance he gets. So you know it's going to happen again.
Oh, no. Yeah. There was a news article like last week of where he did it again. But I'm still slowly but surely catching up on all of the new issue reviews I've missed. I'm working on four videos at once right now for some reason, and they will all be done at the same time. So expect a binge and purge model for my content releases for a while.
Is there a reason why you don't like yourself, Dan?
I mean, we've already been talking for a few hours. I don't know if you want to keep going.
What kind of punishment are you doing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what it comes down to is like, oh, I wrote this script. Time to record it. I don't feel like recording today. I'll just write another script. And like, oh, I have the recordings done. Time to assemble the video. Ah, oh, that's hard, though. Let me write another script. And it just keeps going until I'm like, okay, I have one day of work for each of these things to finish them. Anyway, videos are coming soon. One of those is an audience Q&A, which is always a lot of fun. People ask me weird questions about Green Lantern, and it's fun to think about them. It's like each question is like a little mini video that wouldn't have existed on its own. So I have a whole playlist of those. Check them out. Ask me some weird shit. It's a great time. Mosaic Comics on YouTube. Thank you.
So, Corman, did our episode come out yet?
Oh, yeah. I didn't share the link with you yet.
No, you didn't.
My bad. Yes.
Share it with me so I can push it. I'm thinking,
yes.
He's sitting on this an awful long time. Nothing's going to be topical anymore.
It was like the next day.
Oh, God. Yes. It would have been nice to know, Corwin.
which of Corwin's shows are you on?
Oh, yeah. EMBS. Sorry, I forgot the fourth one. Yeah. That's our pop culture. Just get on and just talk about whatever we're not reading, we're covering on the other shows. Damn it. My bad, Mark. It's just been ridiculous.
All right, give me the link and I'll include it when this one comes out. Maybe I'll even include it when I release the Comic-Con episode, which will be first. All right, so let's wrap this puppy up. Lanterncast@gmail.com. Website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GLcast. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Was that your Gambit impression?
No. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, whatever platform you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think. I think what's probably coming out next, because Chad and I threw out 55 different concepts of what we were going to do next, since we're saving episode 570, since that'll be our 400th. That's going to be the 0 hours, the 30th anniversary issue release review. Unless we have an interview related to that, then that might be. But either way, it will be related to the 0 hour special. So we're probably going to combine War Journal 11 and the next issue of Green Lantern, because I'm sure we can cover those nicely in a little bit over an hour, since there's probably not going to be that. I know there won't be much to talk about for War Journal. Let's see what I don't know if I have a lot of confidence there'll be a lot in Green Lantern either. But
have you looked at the solicits?
Oh, yes, we talked about which one you mean, from like the All In and all that stuff, because we talked about that in the episode that just came out before, which will be out before this one, and the stuff.
That Green Lantern, they're bringing all that War Journal stuff into.
Yes, I don't want to repeat my mini rant, but I do give my thoughts on that in last episode, because it's like, yeah, it's like peanut butter and broccoli, two great tastes that do not go well together, and that's what they're kind of like forcing together, I think. Now, Jeremy Adams might be able to pull it off, because I have more faith in him, but it's not a great idea conceptually, let's put it that way, because neither book is selling particularly well. War Journal selling even worse. Can I mention that too? War Journal was 188. Number 10 was 188 on the list. So it barely was in the top 200. So yeah, let's combine that story with a Jeremy Adams book, which is struggling to stay consistently in the top 75 now, not even the top 50. And it's like, yeah, you and I joked about what all the things with Furiosa. What could possibly go wrong? That's kind of like what this is could be like. But that's the story for another day. Thank you guys for coming on. I'm glad we had a really nice lengthy discussion about all this stuff, because it's nice. And it made even more sense, because this is literally the only Marvel movie this year. So there won't be any repetition until at least February for Captain America. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.